In a moment, the news quiz, but first a short tribute from Simon Hoggart on behalf of the whole news quiz team.
Barry Tuke presented the news quiz on and off for 16 years. He was funny, clever, sharp, incredibly quick, and a generous as well as a brilliant chairman. Barry was one of the great heroes of British comedy, and we all miss him very much.
We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a notice printed on a packet of complimentary American airline nuts, read by Brian Perkins.
Instructions, open packet, eat nuts.
Thanks to Jeremy Clark of Aylesbury for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Linda Smith, and the newcomer to the news quiz, Kirsty Walk. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Sandy Toksvig. Linda, who declared class war on the government?
The teachers. This will be the teachers having their Easter do. That's probably just the only way they can get a holiday now, isn't it? They have to go on these little things. And, yes, it was quite a stormy, really, especially for Estelle Morris, the Minister for Education. She didn't go down very well at all. In fact, I think it was the worst gig of her life. She died on her arse. It was awful. I really felt for her as a fellow comedian, to be honest, because she was... You couldn't help it, because the woman was standing there shouting, "Heard it!" and "Taxi for the Minister." It was just nightmare. And it's a shame, because she's very funny, actually. Possibly a little bit blue for a family audience. It's more of a stag act, but... So anyway, they weren't very impressed with anything she had to say. Not surprisingly, because they were coming up with things like that we should get, I don't know if you saw this, a mum's army of helpers to come in and help. This is how they deal with the shortages of staff, of teachers, that they get volunteer mums in to come and help them. And you think, well, what a nightmare for the kids, apart from anything else. They don't want to be sitting there in class, chatting with their friends, texting each other, and suddenly their mum comes up, spits on a hanky and wipes their face. So what's going to happen now? Are we going to have people conscripted into teaching? It's so hard to get anyone to do it that we're going to be press ganged. You're just going to be sitting having a drink and a load of people with elbow patches come up and club you around the head. Next thing you know, you're teaching a bunch of 15-year-old crack addicts. God.
The thing I liked about it is they had specially organised for all the teachers to hold up the word "strike now," and that each got a letter to hold it up, and when they held it up, they were all in the wrong order. And it said something apparently quite rude in Polish. I believe they got 4 out of 10 for effort and nothing for spelling.
The National Union of Teachers Conference has voted for strike action. Damien Green was jeered when he came to address the conference. He refused to let anyone leave the hall until someone admitted they'd started it. Kirsty, welcome to the news quiz. Who's off to Texas for a bit of DIY foreign policy?
Well, I think this is Tony. Tony would like to go to Texas because he needs a bit of a break. He needs to get his Stetson on because he's really good at different clothes. He wears kind of Paul Smith tops, French Connection things. So he likes cowboy boots. And I know that Cherie likes him in cowboy boots too. So the thing is, it means that she can have Downing Street to herself because she likes to work at home. And she can see clients late into the night if he goes. But, you know, that caused...
Beg your pardon.
But it caused a terrible furore in Parliament, of course, because he's going to Texas without consulting any of the people elected to tell him about what he should be doing over foreign policy.
There's been a lot of nice pictures, actually, of George Bush in the newspapers with his dog. Have you seen? They're very keen on these pictures of the dog. And apparently they're going to allow American dogs to have passports. Did you read this? He's very pleased because he can now bring his lapdog to London, which I found surprising because I thought Tony Blair lived here.
Kirsty's right about the fancy dress, though.
Oh,
wherever
yeah.
he goes, it's like they go to India and they're wearing Indian clothes, yeah. and they're going to Texas, it's the Stetsons. You think when he goes to...
You know why they don't come to Scotland?
Why is that? Come on, Kirsty, tell us why.
If he wore a kilt...
Yes.
And it blew.
Yes.
What would they see?
Your point would be?
today.
Tony Blair jets back to the States this weekend for a summit with his boss, George W. Bush, at the President's Texan Ranch. The ranch lies just 18 miles from Waco. Well, that figures. 2 points to Kirsty. Sandy, why was the Daily Mail so angry that Peter Sissons was marooned?
Oh, I don't know. Was it a big story? Well, yes, I think that perhaps there was an error in the wardrobe department at the BBC, and they had employed a colourblind person who, very sadly, gave Peter a maroon tie when he should have been wearing black. And to try and make up for this, and I think anyone with digital radio will appreciate it, I am in fact wearing a black tie. Those of you listening on old-fashioned radios will still be in black and white and you won't know, but I am wearing a black tie. And there was a lot of trouble. And the Daily Mail completely selflessly attacked the BBC, and it had nothing to do with the fact that Paul Dacre, the editor of the Daily Mail, is the brother of the editor of ITN. That's purely chance, frankly. And I won't have anything scurrilous said about the Daily Mail. Actually, I'll just say, I did meet the Queen Mother once. And she was the patron of my college. And she came along to meet everybody, and they wanted her to meet some foreign students, but of course we hadn't let anybody in who was foreign. So it was decided that I would be the foreign student. And we were lined up in the courtyard, and we were told informative things like, if it begins to rain, you will be informed by the mistress. Which, as we were at Cambridge, I thought we could have worked it out for ourselves.
Depends how you get in.
Well, that's true. It was a well-spent fiver by my father. And we were standing in this long queue, and I had my back to the sort of thing, and I was doing, I think, rather a fine impression of the lady-in-waiting. And I didn't notice that the royal party had come up behind me. And I was tapped on the shoulder by some sort of equerry, and I turned around, and there was the Queen Mother. And in my state of shock, I came out with complete gibberish. I went... And she said, oh, for a foreigner, that is quite fantastic English.
I'm standing by hearing all these female voices. It's crazy. The first time in 25 years.
You want to get out more?
I'm sure.
No, he doesn't. Brian, he wants to go
Brian,
home.
You're not the tea.
What people don't realise is Brian's actually a woman with fantastically successful HRT.
Actually, that's a bit of a problem for the sound recordist as well, because with our three high-pitched girly voices and Alan, it's just going to sound like Alan talking to himself, and the rest of us will only be heard by sheepdogs.
That is a great dirty movie, is three high-pitched girly voices and Alan. If that were directed by Swedes, I'd pay good money to see that.
Or indeed Danes.
I thought you were going to say three high-pitched voices and Sandys. I'm quite pleased.
I actually lived in the East End when she came down in 1940, but I was two. And my mother rushed off with me in a pushchair to see her. But because I was so low, I didn't see her at all. All I saw was all these thighs and calves of women from the East End, which had a pencil line down the back because they couldn't afford stockings. That has stayed in my memory, and I don't know why, for 60 years. It has, in fact, altered my life.
Does that explain why you get a little bit aroused every time you walk past Ryman's?
So, 2 points for whoever got that one right. Well done. Alan, listen to this. White riot by the Clash. Alan, which protest group will be tally-homing in on Parliament this summer?
White riot. By the who? No, by the Clash. It's all these mad buggers on horses. Are they going to come down and, instead of being up in the hills hunting Osama bin Laden, they're going to be down here in London, and they're going to be outside Westminster in hot pursuit of John Sargent.
Quite right. A good idea, though, because there's parts of London that are packed with foxes. Shouldn't you think a bit of a hunt through Oxford Street late at night? I think it'd be rather fine. Let's take the countryside out of the country and put it right smack bang in London, wherever London is.
There's a lot of flat ones on the A41 that I've seen. By the way, that's where they are. And they look like... They look like the sort of stole my mother used to wear, because they're already flat. If you were a smart furrier, you could just peel them off the road and sell them. It's the eyes you can't get right. My mother.
When you
run
over
a real fox,
eyes?
The eyes. But in those fur ties women wore, they had glass eyes.
Oh.
It was either that or my mother. My memory is terrible. One of them had glass eyes. And they followed you around the room.
When the Alliance protesters arrive in London, locals are being urged to shout at them, "Oi, get off our land." We start round two with a cutting from The Guardian.
Tabloid newspapers have been putting the finishing touches to in-depth stories about the footballer and his affairs with two women, though it could only identify them as Miss C and Miss D, and could not even say which position the footballer played in.
Thanks to Judge Satchel of Brighton for that. Linda, who's more than happy that his bubble has been burst?
Oh, this is a heartwarming story, actually, of a little lad, a bubble boy, one of these bubble boys that you get, who have to live in a bubble because they're bubble boys. And he got this thing where his immunity is just rubbish. He's not immune to anything. But cured by gene therapy. They've sort of taken some... look away now if you're a bit squeamish. They take a bit of bone marrow and tinker about with the gene, put it back in, and hey presto, the kid's better, running around, happy as Larry. The bubble perhaps might be used by some very exhibitionist campers. And and that's it, lovely story. And what's lovely about this is, you see, when someone's really ill, science is your boy, really, isn't it? Science is your man in that situation. Chronically ill child, cured by crystals. Never going to happen, really. So I think it's one up to science, one down to the hippie bollocks.
I love the way you explained all that, though. It was like for a brief moment being in the studios of Tomorrow's World. Mind like a scientific steel trap. Fantastic.
The mother of Rhys Evans said how proud she was to see her son playing outside in the open air like a normal kid. Actually, Mrs. Evans, I think you'll find that most normal kids are sitting inside glued to their PlayStation. Kirsty, listen to this.
I don't like Mondays. Tell me why. I don't like Mondays. Tell me why. I don't like Mondays. I want to shoot. Ooh. The whole day down.
Kirsty, which namby-pamby Tory doesn't like Mondays?
Well, the problem is that Ian Duncan Smith would like to sweep with his broom through the Tory party, and he has decided that basically the Monday Club is something that should be relegated to the era of Margaret Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher, of course, is keeping Stumm just now, so he's really got a free run. So he's trying to change things for the Conservatives who are left to actually work on a Monday.
Quite right. Is there not, Kirsty, some Tory group now starting to counter all this dreadful liberalism?
Yeah.
That Ian Duncan's been, and I think that's right.
I do.
I think there's been an appalling amount.
Fascism on Friday.
Appalling amount of fascism. Fascism on Friday. I mean, before you know it, they'll have gay people on Radio 4, and I really. I think there are limits, frankly.
Former members of the Right Wing Monday Club are launching a protest group within the Conservative Party, attacking what they call the social liberal tendency of Ian Duncan Smith. The newly formed Conservative Democratic Alliance urged disaffected Tories to join them if they were fed up with the liberal direction the Tories were taking. Their first signing was a Mr. T. Blair of Waco, Texas. Alan, why is music now a corporate business?
It's not about this bloke, John Carey. We have this bloke, John Carey. He got cured by a hypnotherapist. He eats 50 ballpoint pens a day.
Later.
No, let's do him now, because I don't know this one. Is this the one about... this is one of those internet-y ones, a lot of sad train-spotting prats who operate their keyboard with one hand while they're trying to find out what is popular music. And apparently the most popular music are company jingles by those Jap operations that make you jump up and down in the morning and say, "I'm happy to work for Hoover or Toyota." And a lot of people have listened in and made these, what I believe are called hits. And no pun intended. I mean, these hits on the computer have made the "I Like Working at Kellogg's" song. It wipes the floor with Britney Spears, which I should like to do myself. But it's, you listen to these company songs.
Mm-hmm.
So who listens to them?
People. They sit at their keyboards. I don't know about keyboards. I don't know anything about these things. I just use it as a typewriter. But apparently the things on mine, you can press a button and you can download things, I think the word is. And what you can download are these songs that madmen who work for large corporations sing to make them happy to be at work. Mm. And they're now extremely popular.
Do you think Enron's got one?
Do you know, it's one of those answers which, as I gave it, I realised I knew less and less.
Sounded more and more confident.
I think it may be about the bloke with the ballpoint pens, after all.
Motivational songs have long been derided as nonsense, thought up by overpaid management consultants. But surely that's the whole point of management consultants. Linda, why are salmon leaping for joy?
Ah, now this is a Scottish question, so by rights, Kirsty should be answering this one. It's, again, it's a heartwarming story of a great escape by lots of farmed salmon. And oh, it was awful in the farm. They've got, all their feathers had dropped off. They've been de-beaked. It was horrible. So thousands of them escaped. And they get out into the sea and they think, oh, this is so much better. And all of a sudden, all these Scottish Highland folk rushed down and started nicking them out of the water. Just went mad. They were scooping them up, weren't they? And their sporrans and things.
But what was so scary is the health warning. I said, for God's sake, don't eat these. These are poisonous.
Yeah, poison. Was why they were breeding poison salmon. I don't know, but...
That's not the Scottish salmon story that I heard. I heard that someone has invented an IVF procedure for Scottish salmon. But which story are we heading with? There is an IVF program for Scottish salmon.
I've not heard of that one, although it doesn't surprise me they have trouble reproducing because they do this ridiculous swimming upstream thing,
yeah.
Don't they?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
only that, they live in tins.
Well, 100,000 salmon escaped from an Orkney fish farm this week. After the mass breakout, many of the fish were caught, but one made it as far as the Swiss border before his motorcycle got entangled in the barbed wire. Before we start the final round, here's an extract from the report in the Times on Liza Minnelli's wedding.
The bride arrived in a full-length white mink coat, which the dress designer Dennis Basso had given her as a wedding present over a red sequined party dress. The groom wore dark glasses.
Thanks to Marguerite Wilson and Sam Pease for that. Linda, listen to this.
I love the sound of breaking glass deep into the night. I love the sound of its condition.
Why are angry young men taking their kitchen sink drama down the local for a swift glassing?
Angry young men?
Taking a kitchen sink drama down the local for a swift glassing.
Yeah, that's the same question, isn't it? I don't know who's running this quiz. Robert Mugabe. I do know, actually. Yes, I do. It's actors, isn't it? It's no good nodding on the radio.
It's the only language you understand.
it's actors. We've got the entire gist of this story, but I think it's to do with trying to make students not drink. And some police force somewhere has got sort of actors. They've managed to find a handful of them resting somehow or other. And they've got these actors to go down the pub to have a simulated fight and then throw up. Fight and throw. I don't quite know. I mean,
we've got that already. It's called EastEnders.
But they do it in real pubs. You know, they go out and do it in the real world.
I know that.
And
yeah.
Students are meant to see that.
Race and read the papers. So it wasn't the police, because police actually like students knocking themselves about. It's a thing called, I think, the Portman Trust, isn't it? Which is now an anti-alcohol group. I'd probably get the. I don't meet a lot of people from anti-alcohol groups.
Do you think that if they're looking for actors who can throw up, that what they'll do is they'll find real people who throw up, and then somebody with the card from the BBC talent team will go up to them and.
And there could be a whole series with Nasty Nick vomit stars.
Oh.
Just find the best one.
I like that whole BBC talent thing.
Vomit.
I'm in favour of the BBC talent team. I think it's terrific. I think it's absolutely true that anybody could do this job, and I think this quiz show is absolute proof positive.
Well, it's proof that anybody does.
Well, there is it.
So I did. That's it, isn't it? Actors going, was I all right? I thought you were marvellous. You were marvellous. No, I dried completely. I couldn't vomit at all.
Yes, in the hopes of dissuading the young from drunken behaviour, the drinks industry is employing actors to go into pubs, play out drunken brawls, and end with vomiting. It's not the first time actors have been promoting the drinks industry. Marlon Brando famously did it in that moving scene in Streetcar Named Desire, when he shouted, Stella! Stella! Kirsty, how have boffins brought quaffin into the 21st century?
How have boffins brought quaffin into the 21st century? Is that English?
No,
it's hardly. Like that
tower. No, it's not. I mean, basically, you can't even.
Omen dry.
Nobody can be forced to drink black tar.
No.
It's quaffing. It's quaffing. Hmm?
It's not black tar.
Oh,
no,
it's not.
Come on.
It's about the Japanese.
It's a fantastic invention.
It's a wonderful invention. It's an automatic glass.
It's a fantastic invention. It's got a little microchip in it, right? And as your glass gets near to refilling, a light comes on over the bar.
Yes.
And it's like, you remember the boats when you used to do on the lake? And it's number 62.
Oh, yeah.
Come in. Yeah, it's like
but
that.
I think this is a dreadful idea, particularly in Scotland. That as soon as you even get halfway down your glass, the waiter is hot-footing it over to you to give you more black tar.
And if this Japanese waiter doesn't come over immediately, he has to throw himself on a cocktail stick. We got a couple of points for that.
Yeah,
that's
we did well. Did
we
that.
Reminded.
Yeah, it was our. We got our
reminder.
Take them away.
I'll give a point to Kirsty for telling us the answer, and 2 points to Alan and Sandy for knowing what the answer was. Scientists in Japan have developed an intelligent wine glass which summons the waiter when it needs refilling. Though after a couple of bottles of Chateau Neuf du Pape, it slurs its speech and claims, you're my best mate, you are. Sandy, why has swearing in taken on a whole new meaning in the US courts this week?
Is this to do with the cussing canoeist?
Yes.
Yes. Does the state of Michigan, as they like to call it, or Michigan, as we might more cleverly say, a man was canoeing in Michigan, and he fell, as I think happens every time you get in a canoe, out of the canoe into the river. I think they're a silly mode of transportation. I once canoed across Africa, and no, it's completely true. I did it for the BBC Great Journeys, and I got a condition I can only describe as trench bottom. I digress. And he fell into the river, and he cussed, or swore, as indeed I would have, 75 times, not knowing that behind a rock around a corner stood Mrs. Tammy Smith with her children. And Tammy hated swearing to the extent, in fact, she was the person who counted the 75 times, and he was taken to court because it is against the law in Michigan to swear in public. And she was very, very pleased. And then he went again to court, and he's won this time under free speech. And apparently it's perfectly all right in Michigan now to swear if you fall out of your canoe. And indeed I would have, because I think I've been to Michigan, and I think he was trying to get away.
After a 4-year legal battle, the Michigan canoeist Timothy Boomer has won the right to swear as much as he wants whenever his canoe overturns. The precise vile phrases used by Mr. Boomer are unclear, but one of them was thought to have been Peter Sissons. He gave the court a graphic description of his position at the time his canoe struck the rock, which, under Michigan law, we can only report as located at the higher reaches of a brown stretch of water without any means of forward propulsion. Alan, the question you were praying for, who ate all the pens?
I wasn't praying for it. You gave it to me because I am a biro-fiddler. Well, it is a man, John Carey, not the bloke who's a distinguished professor of poetry at Merton. It's another John Carey, a bloke who eats pens. I mean, he doesn't do it for a living. Professor of pen-eating. I mean, he was eating 50 a week and just swallowing these ballpoint pens and biros, and was eventually suggested that he go to see a hypnotherapist. And the hypnotherapist put him in a chair and waved the watch. He had 3 watches before the hypnotherapist. And eventually, I mean, he just threw up and all these bits of ballpoint pen came out and he was cured. It's a wonderful, touching story. He doesn't eat anything at all now because he is totally cured of pen eating. That can't be a real story. I mean, he claims to be true.
Apparently the Daily Mirror have got a picture of him coming out of Pen Eaters Anonymous.
John Carey, the office worker addicted to chewing Bic biros, is being hypnotised to cure his habit. Doctors are not so worried about his addiction to biros, they're more concerned the habit could lead him into experimenting with more harmful writing implements. He's now halfway through a course of treatment. His hypnotherapist, Andy Cripps, insists he pays by cash, because every time he starts to write a cheque, it takes... Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Linda.
This is a cutting from the Basildon Yellow Advertiser, and it's sent in by Dave Eastwell. It's some correspondence concerning safety over the newly constructed A130 bypass. A spokesman for Chelmsford Borough Council said certain roads are not lit because they are rural roads. When asked how a road gets the rural classification, we were told a road gets the rural classification because it's not lit.
Kirsty.
This has been sent in by Ruth Scott from Abingdon. It's one for everybody that comes from Ambridge. We hope you enjoy your visit to Home Farm today. Here are a few tips to help you have a safe visit. The farm staff are here to help. After touching animals, make sure you always wash your hands, especially before eating and drinking. Please supervise children at all times. Please do not enter animals.
Sandy.
This has been sent in by Charlie Worsley in Guernsey, and it's from Retail Week. And the fact that Charlie has access to it, I think, suggests a limited social life on Guernsey. The opening of a new style Ann Summers store was a popular affair. One Ann Summers source tells the story of an elderly lady customer who bought one of the biggest vibrators available in the retailer's Croydon shop. "Ooh, it's not for me," she declaimed. "It's for getting the air out of my pastry."
Alan.
I've got this mild-mannered cutting, Simon, from the Western Daily Press. His councillor, Harry Parks, security liaison executive, said, "The police can't keep going round all the time to see what is going on. We all know that certain goings-on do go on at night, and the darkness does encourage what goes on. But it doesn't do any good to keep going on about it."
Well, Linda and Kirsty scored a very good 15 points, but Alan and Sandy, the team with the guy, and this week's winner, 18 points. Before we leave you, here's a listing from the Radio Times, spotted by dozens of listeners.
7:45, Just Plain Gardening, in which scholarship girl Violet Grimshaw wrestles with her bush.
Francis Ween will be in the chair next week, but with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corrin, Linda Smith, Sandy Popstick, and Kirsty Wood. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, George Poles, Paul McKenzie, and Dave Cohen. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.
You can hear that episode again tomorrow at 12:30. And as Simon said, you'll be able to hear the last in the present series of the news quiz at 6:30 next Friday, when Francis Ween will be borrowing Simon's chair.